The following podcast is an exclusive presentation of Project Entertainment Network.
Bizarre.
Bazan. Bazan. Bazan.
Bazan. Bazan. Bazan. Bazan. Bazan.
This is Bazan, the bizarre and weird fiction podcast. With me, your host, Mr. Frank. What's going on, Zongers? Thanks for coming back and joining us on Bazong once again for the Big Bazong Show. This week is a wonderful, wonderful guest. It's one of those guests where, you know, I found myself a compatriot in the writing world. You know, I knew of Duncan Bradshaw's work, but, until you really sit down and talk to somebody, you don't really get to know what really they're all about. So this interview is awesome because I found that Duncan is a lot like me. Like he started out focused on horror and discovered Bizarro along the way, and his writing sort of changed to fit that. So he's sort of evolved from a zombie writer into a more Bizarro guy, or he's trying to be more Bizarro in the world. Now, when I started writing, it took a similar path, but Duncan's been at it a little bit longer than me, and he's probably far better than me at it. But the biggest thing is, you know, I always say I'm a horror comedy writer, Zongers, as opposed to a bizarre writer. And I think Duncan sort of has the same ideology on what his work truly is. So I found a kindred spirit in this week's guest, Mr. Duncan Bradshaw, all the way from across the pond. We talk all about that, the British Bizarro scene and Bizarro in Europe in general, and why there are no Irish Bizarros. And we talk about Duncan's two favorite things. It's like an issue of Tiger Beat in podcast form this week, Zongers. So without any further jibber jabber on my part, let's get into the Bizong interview of the one and only Mr. Duncan Bradshaw. Give us the gong. I'd like to welcome to Bazong this week a guy who has got so much going on. I hope we can cram it all in to one episode. There's a lot of ground to cover, so let's make it right quick. Introduce this week's guest, the one and only Mr. Duncan Bradshaw. Duncan, welcome to Bazong.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm doing very well. Duncan, looking at your stuff, you've had an interesting writing career so far. You've started out, it looks like you started out as really like a zombie guy. You were doing a zombie writer, and then at some point there, you sort of pivot and you get into the weird. So let's talk about how far back did you start publishing, and why did you start with zombies?
It was about 4 years ago, actually, pretty much to the day since I released my first ever book.
Wow.
And it was really just, I've got a couple of chums of mine, one I've known for the best part of 20 years and one for sort of about 10 or 2 years. And we were in the pub one day and he turned to me and said, "Oh, I've written a book." I was like, "Oh, that's pretty cool." And then the other guy, pretty much, you know, the one I know for longer, he said, "Oh, yeah, I've written one as well." And you know, always one of these things that you always say, "I'm going to write a book one of these days." And then the next year goes by and you're still sat there playing on the Xbox. And then you go, "Oh, I'm going to write a book one of these days." It keeps going until then. Basically, I just thought, well, if they can, and I'm not, you know, demeaning them because they're both smashing people, I thought, well, if they can, so can I. So I've loved zombies pretty much, well, since I was about six. I saw Dawn of the Dead for the first time. But over like the last, oh God, about 17, 18 years, any zombie film, which I can get my hands on, I pretty much watch. And then spend 5 or 10 minutes afterwards wondering why I did, because most of them are pretty rubbish. So,
okay, go on. Sorry.
I was going to say, and then, it's just weird because I love writing about zombies, but then I just got to a point, I just thought, well, I kind of didn't even know about Bizarro when I first started writing, because it's quite an American, obviously, thing. Mm-hmm. There's not that many British writers. So as soon as I found out about it and started sort of reading some of the books, I thought, you know what? This is pretty much like what goes in my brain anyway. So I should give it a crack.
So it's really just you were kind of sick of writing the zombies and and bizarre presented to yourself in sort of the perfect storm for a transformation of your writing.
Definitely. Like I say, I mean, I wrote, I did a Garrett Cook novella writing workshop about 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And in that, again, it's just one of those things. I just wanted to see if I was actually capable of writing it, because you get, especially when you start writing, you get a lot of advice from people saying, oh, you got to do this, you got to do that, you got to make sure that when you wake up in the morning, you have to go and sip half a gallon of milk and then Ribena and wash it all down with grass and stuff like that. And it's all well and good, but you only really learn it by doing it. So I just thought I'd see how it goes. So we obviously had to come up with these pitches to Garrett. And I remember after about 2 or 3 days, I've got these brilliant ideas, you know, suggested about 6 or 7. He goes, nope. I just messaged him and said, look, mate, please help me. And he said, just got to amp up the weirdness. Mm-hmm. So I just come up with this stupid idea about one thing that you'll learn as this goes on. A lot of things annoy me. At that time, it was celebrities, still a common bugbear. And I hate the magazines. I hate all of that sort of stuff. And I just thought, well, instead of people going out of their way to try and copy celebrity styles or Vogues get bum enhancements and stuff, I thought, well, how about if celebrities were making their own diseases and people were in a rush to go out and get the latest disease?
Nice.
So that's pretty much how it started, really. So
that's really brilliant. But just to circle back real quick to the zombie era of what you're doing.
Yes.
How did you do with that? I mean, it wasn't terribly, for when I think about sort of zombie fiction recently, it might have been more like maybe between 5 and 10 years ago. It was a hot ticket. But what really surprises me about zombie fiction, as much as I'm completely bored of it, I read the hell out of it till I was just loathsome of reading it. But to my surprise, like even to this day, those who read zombie fiction are very dedicated readers, and it's still a pretty strong thing to write in. As far as I mean, being a writer and writing within a certain genre or trope, zombies are still very strong. So were you doing okay with the zombie stuff?
I mean, it was doing okay. I mean, again, the problem is, I say the problem, I was sort of self-publishing, I still am, to be honest. Most of my single books and things like that, which I'm sure we'll get onto later. But I don't know. It's always difficult trying to find a market, first off, and obviously appreciate the zombie, fandom is very wide. But then it's still trying to get people to read your books in the first place. And again, it's like anything, as you just sort of alluded to, really. It's been done to death. So unless you've got something highly original or you've got something which is a bit different, people just generally aren't, well, they just don't really give a shit. Unless, obviously, you're like a Jonathan Mabry or, this, that, and the other. So, I mean, for me, I think I'm hilarious. which most people will probably roll their eyes at. But when I write my zombie stuff, it's there's blood and gore, because funny enough, that's kind of what goes on. But it's humorous as well. I mean, British, we're renowned for, it could be the darkest day in your entire life, but at some point someone's going to crack a joke, just because that's how we deal with things.
Mm-hmm.
And even when a zombie's eating your face off, if someone isn't making a wisecrack about it, then you got to question them, really,
I agree 1,000,000% on that. it's funny. I do write, with a comic slant to my writing and within the horror genre. And I do find it feels like that by and large, people almost don't appreciate that. Like you're ruining their genre or something.
Yeah, I get to my goat. It's like, I you've obviously got conventions over there. We've got Fantasy Con over here, which is, the three pillars of genre fiction in one place. and I've been on a panel the last 2 years, which is basically humor and genre fiction. And it's like a dirty word. It's just people are almost like, but there's elves in here and they have got a noble quest to rid the world of dragons. And it's like, well, have you got any butt jokes in it? Have you got, is anyone throwing up?
Yo, that would ruin the darkness.
Exactly. But humor is, to me, humor is harder to do, actually, I think, than horror, because obviously you can get different kinds of scares. You've got jump scares, you've got, the sort of the psychological, you've got this, that, and the other. But to make someone laugh, and test their gag reflex is pretty damn tricky.
I guess so. Like, for me, it's sort of my natural instinct is to go for the humor in those moments. You know, like you say, the jump scare, and usually people freak out and run or whatever. You know, if I were to write a jump scare, it would be scream and then smack the monster and beat the shit out of him, scare the shit.
Yep.
And, you know, it would turn like that. That would be the humor of the situation.
Same,
but that's that's like the your natural
instinct.
Right, yeah. So I always, like, when I'm out on that con circuit or doing signings, my pitch is always like, yeah, it's like Tucker and Dale versus Evil. Although, you know, my books aren't really Tucker and Dale versus Evil, but it's the only thing that people can connect with and sort of smile. Like that movie, or I'll say Shaun of the Dead. Oh, Shaun of the Dead. Yeah. Wonderful.
That's the thing I had with my with the first zombie, but even my collection of it. It's just they kind of give you a blank look, and then you say, do you like Shaun of the Dead? Oh, I love Shaun of the Dead. It's like, well, you might like this then. It's just, you should have to debase things for a lower common denominator for people to think, you know what, that actually sounds like something I might want to read.
Yeah, I hate doing that because it's just...
But again, we have to, because like you say, because as you said, as soon as you mention comedy and it's in genre fiction, and especially horror, people just literally don't want to get out of that room as quickly as possible, you know?
It's so very true. Now, when you were writing this...
But then they read it.
Yeah.
But then they read it, and then they go, you know what, that was so funny. I was laughing one sentence, and I was, you know, throwing up the next. And it's like, well, yeah, that's kind of what we do.
That's what we were hoping for. Thank you. I'm glad you laughed, because if that's the last thing. I'm uncomfortable doing. It almost sounds like the way you present yourself, you're the same way, is I hate saying, oh, this hilarious book, this funny, will have you rolling. Like, that's not for me to decide. Like, I think it's funny, but until you read the book and laugh, and I do have those reviews where, like, oh, I laughed out loud. It was so, I'm like, oh, good, thank God.
Yeah. I had the inverse. So I've only put one thing out on Audible, and it's the most scathing review I had, and they were saying, oh, the narrator was brilliant, you know, the intonation, blah, blah, blah. However, the story, whoever wrote this is just not funny at all. You know what I mean? They're just, I thought I was going to laugh out loud, and I was just eye rolling my entire way through. And I was like, well, yeah, that's because it's a very personal thing, you know? I'm quite, you know, my humor is a bit slapstick and a bit sort of, it's just a bit puerile. Thinking places, but that's what makes me laugh. And then sometimes I'll try and be clever, you know, but as you say, it's such a personal thing. But when someone says they actually laughed, it's just you know, you've won then. So
yeah, it's not for me to decide whether it's funny. It's for you, and then when you say it's funny, that's the biggest victory there can be. So now when you're writing this zombie stuff, obviously you got the bend towards humor, but do you think you also were, like, even though you weren't aware of Bizarro at the time, like, it had just a weirdness to it that, you know, sort of run-of-the-mill zombie fiction didn't have?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose more my sort of, I then did a sort of follow-up book. It's supposed to be part of a trilogy, and I've done really well in writing the other two books, and I haven't. And then I just, because, again, the problem with watching zombie films is that I have to have something in them which is a bit different from all the rest, because otherwise it's a bit pointless. Like, Night of the Comet's pretty cool. For me, that was like the second major sort of zombie film which I saw, which really stuck in my head, even though other zombies are not going to get into it. But yeah, I mean, so I then came up with the idea of shit zombies.
Okay.
Like, just because...
they're made of? Or they
combine too much. It combined with two favorite things, you know, which is poop and zombies.
Yeah.
And it's just space... Basically, they stumble across this farmyard, and there's, you know, the Hills Have Eyes kind of yokels in it. And this guy basically just goes into an old slurry pit, where they were getting rid of people that they didn't like very much by drowning them in liquid poo. So then you're then fighting this guy, who's obviously dead, but quite rancid as well. So,
well, I can appreciate both poo and zombies. I like that. I actually had to make a note of that. Duncan Bradshaw's too. Like, I'm gonna be like one of these Tiger Beat or People magazine things. We'll be on the cover. Open up inside to find out Duncan Bradshaw's two favorite things. So anyway, before we beat the zombies into oblivion, you're doing this pivot. I think is it recently where you're just sort of moving away from the zombies and just embracing this weird thing, and there's a lot to talk about there, or have you been sort of slowly pivoting on this?
I think it's just one of those things. I wouldn't say it happened overnight. After the zombies, I wrote like a sci-fi horror novella because I'm a waffler, as you might have gathered. So I just kind of just ramble on, which then obviously I had to go and cut down editing. So I wanted to write a novella, which I did. I wrote a sort of a relatively serious sort of epic 500-year-old story across, you know, six stories and shit. And then I wrote another zombie collection because zombies. But then, I don't know, it's just, I was finding the more books I was reading and enjoying were the weird things. So like Help a Bear Is Eating Me,
yes,
it's still one of my favorite books of all time.
Gorgeous.
I just literally, anytime anyone says that we've got book recommendation, I tell them they have mm-hmm. to read it. They don't really listen to me, but because obviously the poo zombies, but I do tell them. And then obviously things like I Will Rot Without You, I think that's just such a beautiful book many ways.
Absolutely.
And obviously Shatterquake, which was again one of the mm-hmm. first proper Bizarro books I read, and I thought, Jesus Christ, this is brilliant. And then I don't know, it wasn't like I got bored of zombies. I just realised that I could write better, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Okay.
And I had more ideas in my head that were on other things, which just interested me a bit more, really. So
right, like almost maybe you said everything you needed to say about zombies, and just continually writing with it in that is too, you know, it's too much of like being in a cage. And especially like when I first read Bizarro, I was like, oh, like, you know, we've cut the cord, the rules don't apply,
yeah.
The world, you know, the sky is the limit here. And yep. there's this absolute freedom, you know, to just reading it, like yep. the rules don't apply anymore, and writing it as well. So maybe yep. that's the thing. Like, I'm not stuck in this. I'm not being pigeonholed. I'll start pigeonholing myself in the zombie thing. And now there's this.
Definitely. And I say to me, I think it was just that thing as well. And I don't know if you felt it, but I kind of felt like I needed permission in a way to write this weird stuff, because it's not normal. Let's be honest. I mean,
yeah.
People that write Bizarro, their brains aren't normal, and I can't even offend people, because that's just that's a God-honest truth. And it's just, to me, I kind of had all these ideas, and I just thought, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I should do it. And I read Vinyl Destination by Adam Millard. He's quite lucky to call him a friend as well as anything else. Mm-hmm. And I finally read that book, and I thought, do you know what? Enough messing around. If Adam can do it, and he's just got the balls to go ahead and just do it and, you know, put these ridiculous things in, why can't I? So that's the moment for me when I started realizing, you know what, I've got way more things in my brain which people kind of give me weird looks for, which I find interesting, because ultimately I have to interest myself as a writer, because I've got a very low boredom threshold.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm not getting it, if I'm not enjoying it, then there's no point, really, is there? So
that's absolutely how I felt. Like, oh, if this counts, then then the game has changed.
Yeah. So was there a book for you that you kind of felt sort of changed the way you did things? Or?
I mean, really, the first Bizarro book I read, and unwittingly I read it, was when Brian Keene was switching over to Deadeye Press. And obviously, yeah. I'm looking at the Deadeye website, and I'm seeing all these crazy covers and these crazy titles, and I'm like, holy shit, like, this is like, I have not seen this on the shelf at Barnes & Noble or anything like that. Like, this is something different. And I can't go to Barnes & Noble and get this neither. I got to get it off the website and stuff.
Yeah.
So I started ordering it. And the first book that really, like, I saw the title, it was Baby's First Book of Seriously Fucked Up Shit. And I'm like, I how can you not buy a book called that? And, you know, and I'm still thinking, like, Brian Keene, horror, Deadeye Press.
Yeah.
So I bought it and I started reading it with that horror mind frame, maybe like something extreme or something like that. But the first, I'm pretty sure it's the first story in that book, is about a beauty pageant for fetuses. And I was like, this is not horror.
Yeah.
But
we're no longer in Kansas anymore.
What the fuck? Yeah. And it was just a whole fetus beauty pageant contest, and I mean, it was really, you know, ramping up on that whole like the JonBenet Ramsey idea and the craziness of that,
yeah.
and just taking it to the extreme of like, they don't even have to be born yet for us to really fuck with these kids. and I got done reading that story and all the other stories in it too. Like, there were more bizarro than there were horror in that, and
yeah,
that was Robert Devereaux, by the way. And I got done reading that book, and I'm like, what the hell? I'm like, that was not horror. I've read Stephen King and everything in between. That was not horror. What the hell was that? And then so I have to dig deeper, and that's where I discover this whole, oh, well, you know, Deadite's from Eraserhead, and Eraserhead's got this. And if you thought Deadite titles were weird, look at what Eraserhead has. And, and just the floodgates opened up from there. So, you know, that was my, I really unwittingly stepped into Bizarro, and I just started devouring. It was like the only thing, like, there's no rules here. There's no formulas. This is wide open. And I love the shit out of it, to the point now I'm doing a podcast for 2.5 years surrounding it. but I love, that's the thing too, is I love talking to the people because they're like-minded. They have that, you know, you get it. You were doing the zombie thing, and then you found Bizarro Fiction. You're like, oh, this is so different, and I want to do it too. And so you get to connect with people like that, and that are, can appreciate that, because, you know, just like the horror humor too. Like when you say Bizarro, there's a lot of people that are like, I don't know if I can handle anything weird today. Yeah. And it's half of the fun is trying to convince them. And like you know, you always tell people, Help a Bear is Eating Me is a wonderful gateway drug to Bizarro.
Yeah. Yeah, because in a way, because I think the reason why that book appealed in a way is because as it's always based, you know, centered in a bit of reality, and I think that's a brilliant way people get into it. Because obviously, if you tell someone's going to be Dark Goblins from Auschwitz, they're going to look at you and probably try and section you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's weird. So my mum, so I'm quite lucky that my mum, my dad, my wife, etc., they all read my books. Mm-hmm. But my mother, she started reading Celebrity Culture, the first Bizarre novella I did, and she couldn't finish it because I literally went overboard in it. It was just really OTT on, you know, descriptions, everything. It was just really quite a dense book. Christine Morgan read it and said it turned her brain into a slinky, which I was quite happy with.
Oh, nice.
But even my wife, because I'm quite lucky, so I as soon as I got a book in a decent enough draft, my wife reads it. She's sitting next to me because, of course, that's the thing about when you write is people read it and they go, oh, you know, got a review, that was real lols or whatever. But you don't get any feedback. You don't know what works. You don't know what doesn't. So I'm quite lucky. I'm there pissing around doing whatever. And the missus just looks at me and she goes, the fuck have you put this in there for? Or she's rolling her eyes, or she's going, oh, God. And I know then that, you know, because I write books for two people. That's one, me to entertain, and to go and entertain a wife. So as soon as she turns around and she's like, look, she's giving me that look, you know what I mean? I'm like, yeah, that's definitely staying.
that's great that you have that, because, I mean, by and large, you know, my friends and family don't read my stuff.
All right.
I don't care. I don't mind, I should say.
No.
My wife was into my...
You're doing it for you, I'm guessing, aren't you? So.
What's that?
You're writing it for you, aren't you, really?
So. Oh, absolutely, yeah. And I don't ever... I just don't expect, like, friends and family to they would appreciate my stuff, you know? I don't think they're of that mind. I know when I was doing, you know, starting out and I was really focused on short stories, my wife was kind of reading my stuff. You know, I'd go over, you know, what I'd written with her, sort of beta reading with her. And I got to one story where I wrote, it was a zombie story, but I was masking it under the, it's zombies, but they're food that comes to life instead of people. And my wife has a problem, just a weird thing with if milk spills on the floor, she wants to vomit. I don't understand it, but it's a thing. If the gallon of milk falls out of the fridge, I'm heading for cover. So without thinking about it, there was some part about milk spilling or congealing and like cottage cheese, and I'm reading it out loud to her, and she runs to the bathroom, and I was like, oh shit. And from the bathroom, it was like my proudest moment, my most horrified moment. From the bathroom,
I'm not surprised.
I'm like, yes, I made somebody puke with my words. So, but ever since then, it's not
that's
been.
A,
she's just like
a claim to fame, man.
Yeah. But ever since then, she's like, yeah, you write your stories. Don't include me on that. I'm like, I swear to God, that's the only milk that has ever spilled in any of my stories. As weird as that is. So yeah, and when I put my first short story collection out, of course, you know, my parents are there all proud, oh, we want a copy of your book too. I'm like, here you go. I'm like, they're not gonna fucking read this shit. And then like a couple of weeks later, like, really, a penis eating zombie? I'm like, you've read that shit? What are you doing? You're not supposed to read it. You're just supposed to put it on the shelf and say, look what my boy did. But no, they read it. I'm like, oh. So I mean, you know, they tried, but What I write is definitely not for my parents. I would never expect them to continue reading my stuff. So, I mean, but to hear that, that's been my experience with my family, so you can understand where. But it's great that you have that, that somebody close to you that.
Making someone vomit, it's quite an extreme reaction, so.
Yeah, I like that. So now, the new book, it's Mr. Sucky. It's out, it just came out November 2nd, available wherever you want to buy books, essentially. Definitely, if you want to buy them on Amazon, they're there. But Mr. Sucky, is this your first, like, true, full-on Bizarro product?
So Celebrity Culture was a novella I released probably about 2 years ago. Since then, mm-hmm. I've written a book called Summoned, which is being edited. Okay. It seems like it's been in the editing stage for about a year and a half now. And that's basically a world-ending monster gets summoned by a game of Scrabble on a triple word score.
Oh, nice.
And it's kind of like a choose your own adventure light game. So, I love making myself work. So there's about essentially five or six, seven different stories inside this one bloody book, which is reason why it's been so long in gestation. And then about a year and a bit ago, I woke up at my mother's house, not in the same bed, and I just had the title came to me, and it's Cannibal Nuns from Outer Space. Mm-hmm. Because I just love those old B movies. So that's written. I've shot that around a bit, and I'm probably going to be putting that out myself next year because it's basically a summer blockbuster film. It's a film that's basically bypassed the entire filming process and just gone straight to book. Mm-hmm. So that's coming out next year. But then, I realized this sort of summer window had gone. I thought, well, it's been nearly 2 years since I put anything out. Mm-hmm. I kind of want to do something. So I just woke up again, not in my mother's house this time, and actually in a bed. And I just had this idea about this murderous vacuum cleaner. And I just thought, you know what? If I can kind of get this ready for the end of the year, then at least then I can actually put something out and feel like I'm not complete until abject failure at writing. So basically what I did. So
it is glorious. Just to look at the cover is really glorious. You've immediately you look at the cover and say this is something different because it looks like instructions to a vacuum cleaner.
Yeah.
and
I gotta say Matthew Reber did a cover for that. It's again, you know those people you can't look at a book, you think there's nowhere on this earth I can ever get him to go and do my cover from a book. And I messaged him. He goes, yeah, no worries. What do you want? And it's like, are you serious?
Yeah, he's good, but I would never have said that's a Matthew Revert art design there.
But he's, I'm quite particular in these sort of things. So I always do briefs for the illustrators or artists or whatever, and they usually run to a good couple of pages. And it makes me sound like such a pretentious wanker, you know what I mean? But and he comes back and goes, yeah, that's no problem at all. I was like, okay. So about a week or so later, he sent me across. And again, this is what my brain makes work for me, you see. And I thought, he sent over, it's absolutely fucking brilliant. And I said, do you know what? I think I'm going to make the entire book like a Hoover instruction manual, which has been found and photocopied, and that's what the book is. Mm-hmm. So it's like A4 size.
Yeah.
Because why not? I've done it. So every page it's basically done with a background of a photocopy paper, and it's just I've got sort of fake instructions at the front about how to set the Hoover up and how to clear blockages mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And again, just to me, because books, especially physical books, they're something which I've always loved. You know, I was a big Roald Dahl fan as a kid, so the illustrations that kind of really drew me in. Mm-hmm. And reading the book, it takes you away somewhere. So I just kind of want all my books to kind of have this little, just sound a bit different in them, you know.
I mean, that's absolutely brilliant. Like, that's the other part of the cover is not only does it look like an instruction manual from a vacuum cleaner, but it also looks like photocopied instructions to a vacuum cleaner. And that you've continued that. Yes. I mean, that's like pure dedication that it reads that way the whole way through. To hear that, it's pretty brilliant. Now, I got to imagine that the ebook version doesn't do that for you. Like, there's a lost in translation thing if you pick up the ebook.
Yeah, let's say. I mean, it's just not possible. So I kind of made a conscious decision now that because I put so much effort into the paperback side of things, it just doesn't really translate very well into right. ebooks. So I've taken a lot of that sort of stuff out. So it's only got like one of the pictures in. All the sort of, you know, credits at the end, I've just basically stripped out and put to normal text. So Cannibal Nuns, for instance, when I put it out next year, it's going to have three versions. It's going to have, because again, my brain is sort of, I've got a brilliant idea for you. So it's basically made up like as if you're watching a DVD. Yeah. So I've got fake trailers at the front. So, you know, like a mock movie poster and like the There Was a Time of Horror, that kind of sort of, you know, synopsis, 250-odd words for each of those. Then, so on a digital version, it's going to have slightly different ones, different trailers, because obviously it's been copied from a cinema. Then the paperback is going to have two different trailers and a deleted scene. An alternate ending. Then the super duper limited edition, you know, you've always seen the ones like Arrow release and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's got all the trailers. It's got deleted scenes, the other alternate ending, a director's commentary, all that sort of stuff, you know, and it's just basically just going to be like that. Because again, why not? I just love making myself work. So
I was going to say this doesn't sound like a Gene Simmons of Kiss level ploy to make more money. It really just... It sounds like just you're dedicated to this you know, artistic vision that you have, and it, you know,
yeah,
even if your sanity be damned, right?
Yeah, definitely. I just I realized quite quickly that I'm not gonna be making a living from my books, because I just you know, I love pen. I'm gone past that now. I just don't care, because to me, I've known people that have put books out that they're not happy with.
Mm-hmm.
Or that they haven't edited properly, and you read it, you think this is awful, and you tell them, and they go, yeah, it's absolutely fine. No one will notice, and of course, everyone knows.
Yeah,
and it's just, to me, if you put something out into the world with your name on it, it has to be the best you can do at that moment in time. I'm not saying that a year later, you don't come along going, you know, if I was doing that now, I could have done this, that, and the other. That's how you know progress works. That's
right. Yeah, move on to
something, and you
one,
get
yeah.
better at it. Yeah. Right, but at that moment in time, it has to be the best thing you can put out. And if it isn't, then you shouldn't be doing it, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And unfortunately, those books happen far too often. But I think I think that also those people that were just sort of, oh, I can make a book too. And unfortunately, they were. I think those people have now, like over time, they've through the attrition of like, oh, I didn't make $1 million just doing this simple. I think they're starting to go away, and it's starting to, you know, shrink to pretty much legitimate stuff out there. So
yeah, definitely.
And people like you who have this, you know, added dedication to the cause, like you want to present, like, okay, I can't do this in an ebook, but while I have this opportunity for something physical to make this book a little something extra special and really drag you into this world, this experience. Where you pull that photocopied look throughout a book and really like dedicate yourself to that feel. That is awesome. I love when people do that.
You kind of have to. I mean, to me, I know that I'm not a highbrow literary type. I mean, people can tell that pretty much within the first 5 minutes of meeting me, and I basically, you know, swore at him God knows how many times. But I just like entertaining people, and that's what this is my outlet, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, if I can make people laugh, great. If I can make people, I've made people throw up. I'm actually, that's going to be my new calling in life now. I think I might just go and write something with their spilled milk and send it to your missus just so I can go and have someone throw up.
Yeah, you got to find those people that, like, not even necessarily spilled, but just have a problem with weird things. Like, I also dated a girl who couldn't stand the thought of biting yarn. And so all I had to do was sit there and grab a sweater out of the closet when I was angry at her, and that would like just completely set her off. So if you can find those people with those weird quirks and then write books to them, and then you can sell those three people that book, I guess that's probably the best way to do it. Maybe, you know, but you're a dedicated guy.
I think
you would see that to the end.
Yeah, man.
I wanted to also discuss about this pretty interesting thing. You're making the bold claim that you've created a new genre called Gorecom.
Yeah.
Please tell me what Gorecom is.
It's basically it's not too convoluted a story. So I asked Chris Kelso, that lovable Scottish rogue, for a cover quote for Cannibal Nuns. And he sent something across to me, and I can't remember verbatim, but he basically said there's very few people that can make a story, a gory story about cannibal nuns, funny and disgusting at the same time. And I just thought, well, my biggest fear is that I don't think I'm perhaps horror enough to be a horror author. I don't think sometimes I'm bizarre enough to be a bizarro author. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of thought, well, when I read that quote, I thought, well, that basically sums me up. I'm very over the top. You know, there's blood guts, there's people using intestines as skipping rope. But then it's, you know, there is a humor to it. And I just thought, I just kind of just made this little label up and just sort of sod it. To me, it kind of marks this ground onwards for me in this new little venture of mine, you know? So
I like that. I like that because that's what I'm feeling nowadays is that so much bizarro is not the bizarro we first came to know. Like, it's so the definition expanded. The range of people writing it has expanded at what they're doing. Yeah. Even those, you know, you still have always that Carlton Mellick book you can count on, Emma Johnson. Those are, to me, like the hardcore bizarro. That's what they write. But more and more as people come into the fold, they expand the definition of what it is to the point where nowadays it's like, what, you know, it's almost like expanding beyond that definition. So maybe it's time to rebrand it or just, you know, for yourself, call it something that's not, it's not this and not that. I always, I put in my bio, I walk the fine line between horror and bizarro because, you know, it's not there. I don't feel the same way. I don't feel comfortable calling myself a bizarro writer. But it's also sort of disingenuous to say I'm a straight horror writer for those reasons we spoke about earlier with the humor. So it's almost nice that you can say, well, you know, I'm this thing at least for yourself, like you're not, obviously, I know you're not saying, oh, I have invented something new and we're at this movement.
God, no.
Yeah. But nice that you can.
Exactly. It's just, I suppose for me, like I say this book in particular does kind of mark the next sort of three or four books I've got coming out after this, are all along similar vein in that they're over the top. They're silly. They're just ridiculous, you know? Mm-hmm. And, I just thought that this kind of, however long I do it for, this is my period in my life now, my writing life now, when I want to do this. And I just kind of want to bracket it, you know. I'm always, you know, people always say, oh, I hate being labeled, you know, I hate being labeled. And then I go come up with a label for myself because obviously that's what you do.
That's good. No, that really works. And I like that you're almost like saying to people, like, I went through my zombie period. Now I'm in my horror com period. Yeah. At least, you know, for the foreseeable future, this is where I am. Yeah, that's cool.
Yep.
Now, speaking of the foreseeable future, you did rattle off some things you had, like, out there in submission world. Is that your current focus, is to get things published elsewhere for a while now? Or what's the sort of near next year or so look like for you?
Well, so I mean, one of my aims is still to go and have a book of mine published by, you know, a bizarro publisher. That's still one of my sort of, you know, I'm not really a goal oriented person. Again, it sounds very contradictory in terms, but if you feel like it's that validation, you know? But again, I kind of rally again. Because I think sometimes, well, if I'm not bizarro enough to count myself as a bizarro writer, then how am I going to get a bizarro publisher to publish my work, you know? So it's that kind of sort of revolving sort of weird sort of thing in my head. Mm-hmm. And plus also, you know, us writers, as well as being needy, we're also, we can't take rejection anymore. So I'd probably have to go and climb the roof and throw, obviously, you know, like rotten fruit and stuff at passers-by and their dogs. but again, so... I sort of submitted something in the Razorhead submission window, which didn't get through. But again, it's that kind of thing of, okay, fine, dust myself down. It's not weird enough. It's not perhaps what they're after. So let's try and perhaps see if the next thing I'm writing is going to be. So it's just one of those sort of things that, again, while it's an aspiration, it's not my be all and end all. I'm not consumed by it day in, day out, because ultimately I've kind of do my own thing anyway. And again, in a way, maybe sound such an arsehole. Letting someone else publish my book, I'd lose all that creative control.
Mm-hmm.
So say if I gave Mr. Saki to say a publisher, and he went, oh, that's fine, we're going to put it in a 5x8 or, you know, 5¾x8, and it'll be this and it'll be that. And I'd be like, that's great. You know, because obviously the more stressed I get, the higher pitch I get. That's great! I just think of all these things which I personally would have done. I'm thinking, oh, such a missed opportunity. But again, that's kind of, you know, that's my pipe dream. Ultimately, I'm going to still be writing my weird stuff.
No,
I'll send it around.
Yeah,
and if not, I'll do it myself.
I'm with you. I'm with you on the whole creative control thing. And I'm less likely to submit nowadays than just to go on ahead and, you know, have the book edited myself, have a cover done, and just do it myself, and I'll handle this. And you know, I'm probably not doing the best for myself in the long term, but I certainly, like, you know, a lot of times I look at it too, is what is the publisher really doing that I can't already do for myself, you know? If I go with a publisher, I still got to go beat feet and get out there and push the book and market and everything like that. So, there's a lot of publishers that maybe will up your reader profile. Like, people are more apt to pick up your book because you're published by that publisher. But it almost feels like, you know, that and not having to pay for editing services and cover art, which can be quite expensive. But, you know, it's the trade-off, like you said, the creative control that you lose. And especially, like, I'm just putting out normal books. Like, you have, like, a lot more artistic vision to your stuff that I can only imagine you're even more guarded about making sure it happens correctly for you.
Yeah. But I say, again, you know, it is what probably my ambition. I'd love it to get, again, like I say, it, just because I think it'll open up a few more windows and a few more doors. And because, again, being a British bizarro author is, I say, there's not many of us over here. I mean, we huddle together for warmth in these autumnal months, sharing stories, which we cram down into pipes and smoke. So that's not the meth.
That really happens.
That's for the spring. So for me, I think, you know, it's like cultural differences anyway. And and I say, obviously, my writing needs to go and get to another level, which is sufficiently bizarre enough or fits in with, you know, the submission guidelines for, you know, one of the sort of bizarre presses out there. And if I see something, I'll go for it. And if I get it, great. And if not, then no matter, I'll just go and make more work for myself and put it out myself, you know? So.
No, that's I think that's a perfect business model for yourself there. I absolutely agree. And I you make it sound like there's just no British bizarre authors, but I feel doing this podcast, there's far more than I would have ever expected. I've gotten to talk to many. You're added to my collection now. But you know, the funny thing is, the one I haven't gotten an Irish bizarre author yet. What's up with that? Is that like even like, you know, the Irish are no good over there? But
I can't think of one on top of my head, actually. It's obviously you got Chris Kelso sort of waving the Scottish barrier.
Yeah.
And I've got Madeline Swan, and you've got Liam Shardlow, you've got Chris Meekins over here, Zach Ferguson as well, so obviously with Nihilism Revisited down south. So, yeah, that's a bit peculiar.
John McNee, another, comes to mind, talking to.
Yeah.
But no Irish. There's a couple of Irish horror writers I'm aware of, but not not Bizarro. Maybe we'll have to look into that. Maybe they're all burning too
I think so.
Turf over there or something is getting to their brains. but no, I to me, it seems like there is sort of a decent presence over there. I know, you know, we're talking about maybe a dozen people in a land of millions, but still, you know, it's not completely barren for you. I have to assume you've all gotten together at some point somewhere along the line and connected.
Well, that's funny. Say, because we're actually meeting up, a few of us meeting up at the beginning of December, actually, in a Sherlock Holmes pub in London. So,
nice.
Gonna have a few beers and probably scare each other to us. But
that's glorious to hear that's happening. And then it's all see, I always picture it like, you know, it's like the Monty Python of bizarro, you know, meetings. Instead of Portland, it's over there. Who's the John Cleese of the group, you know?
Well, that's got to be Liam, because he is ridiculously tall. He has just got. Let's just say that he's like the catwalk model of British bizarro. He's got legs that go up to his armpits.
Well, he did write a story about beautiful people, right? He should know.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it's pretty much his autobiography. He didn't. I've probably ruined it now for people, but it is actually his autobiography.
He just throws himself off of buildings all day long, throwing his beautiful self.
He lives in Derby. Well. There isn't much else to do.
Oh, okay. All I have to do is be beautiful, huh?
Yeah. That is one thing. If you're not beautiful, then he's just,
you really got nothing going for you. Might as well throw yourself off a building. I agree. Duncan Bradshaw, it's been a treat talking to you. And I'm glad we've sorted all this mess out that you've been writing all over the place. And
yes,
I am absolutely intrigued by the new book, Mr. Sucky. I hope everybody goes out and maybe, you get yourself the ebook to see what that is, and then get yourself the real physical book to get the full blown experience. It sounds like you need both to me.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely. And so you can line his pockets with all that money, all that Mr. Sucky money.
Yeah, I mean, because, basically my brain is costing me lots and lots and lots of money. So I'm living in a carrier bag outside of Swansea at the moment. So anything is going to help.
That's good. That's important. All right. Duncan Bradshaw, thank you so much for joining us on Bazong. And when you get that first legitimate Bizarro book out there, you'd be sure to come back on the show and tell us all about it.
I will do. Cheers, man. Thanks for having me.
How about a round of applause for our guest, the one and only Duncan Bradshaw? I really did legitimately have a wonderful time talking to Duncan, getting to know him, getting to know that we're not unlike, the two of us. And that's just a wonderful thing when you can connect with somebody that you can connect with and appreciate their thing. So I look forward to checking out Duncan's new book, Mr. Sucky. That sounds really freaking right up my alley. I'm going to make it a point to check that out here some point in the coming months. Because Zongers, as you probably know, if you're an astute listener, Mr. Frank is a chronically slow reader. I don't get to check out all the books of the people that I interview. I try to get as much as I can in, but God, Zongers, I don't read very fast. It takes me several weeks to get through, a normal size book. And so I can't get in, I'm interviewing upwards in the neighborhood of 50 plus guests a year, and I don't read 50 plus books a year. I'm in the category of, we're coming up in the end here, our year end here, and on Goodreads, I'm right around 35, give or take. Well, I'm definitely getting 35 books in, maybe 36, 37. That's about my high end the past few years in reading. So I don't get as many authors as I interview. I don't read that many books. So I do try to read the books I'm genuinely interested in. Of course, I can't read everybody's work if I'm not all in on their work. But I do want to check it out. And I especially love, whether I read the book or not, just spotlighting authors who are doing fun, cool, interesting, odd, offbeat things in fiction. That's what the Bazong's all about, isn't it, Zongers? And so Mr. Duncan Bradshaw certainly fits that bill, but definitely, as you heard in the interview, he's a very fun guy, and I would definitely want to check out Mr. Sucky. That sounds like a very cool book. So in the coming months, definitely I'll get Mr. Sucky in here 2019 sometime. So we have that to look forward to. I will be coming out with my own personal best reads of the year list. It's really not very often. I don't take in too many books published in the current year that I'm reading. I'm like 2018. If I say I wind up at 35 books on the year, if five of them were published in 2018, it would be a lot. And I think that's true for most readers. I know a lot of people who do book reviews and stuff obviously want to focus on all the new material. They don't go back and review stuff that's several years old for the most part. But yeah, Zongers, I think like most people, I'm all over the place. I've been reading some Ray Bradbury this year, some Richard Matheson, and I've been reading some newer stuff too. So it's all over the board, and I count all that. Whatever I read in a year, that's like, my top. I'll do like a top 10 book of the year awards of stuff that I read. So, Ray Bradbury may finally get his Mr. Frank due 40, 50 years later. So good on him. So, you know, that'll be posted on my own personal blog, but I'll make sure I share it around here, Bazongers. And while you're waiting for Mr. Frank's top 10 books of the year list, why don't you go over to Project Entertainment Network's Patreon page, where we give you value-added content for as little as $1 a month. Really fun stuff going on over there. We've been really collectively, all the hosts of the Project Entertainment Network, making a push to add a lot more value-added content over at the Project Entertainment Network's Patreon page. Just looking through their recent posts over there, Hard at Work has a Questions from the Stockroom special show you can get access to for $1 a month, something you can't get access to on their regular free feed. Chuck Buddha is giving away proof copies of his Haunted Gunslinger trilogy, at least it's a trilogy so far. You can win proof copies there, and that's something that you can get in on for the dollar level. So for as little as $1 a month, you can get in on getting in on that Chuck Buddha 3-book giveaway. Of course, we have the Unsupervised Podcast was just at the Southwest Florida Con with Armand Rosamilia from Armcast and Mondo Method and Chuck Buddha from Mondo Method. And they did a big crossover show. There's a lot of extra video from they did like a rock band thing, the Unsupervised Boys and Girls, and Mondo and Chuck all did a rock video there. And they also did a bonus episode only available on Project Entertainment Network's Patreon page. Of course, there is also Not Bazong. I've been doing it's kind of rough with the holiday months connecting with hosts, but I do Not Bazong, where I interview the other hosts of the Project Entertainment Network to find out what makes those shows tick. There's also the Rosamilia Road Trip, where Armand and his lovely wife Shelley from the Lunch Lady Book Club they go out and they have a night on the town and they talk about the food. It's like a food travelogue of their travels in and around the world, because they do a lot of traveling. Armand is a wonderful writer, and he does a lot of traveling, especially up and down the East Coast for conventions and whatnot. We sort of famously now do the Beers and Fears tour every spring in the New Jersey area, touring breweries and selling books. And every time we do one of those, we go out and eat somewhere, and that's something Armand and Shelley have done, and now they're turning it into a Patreon-only podcast. So all this cool stuff you can get for as little as $1 a month, and it helps the network, you know, keep going, because also, you know, recently coming in the new year, we're paring down the network down to 20 shows now. Some people have dropped off for one reason or another. It's, you know, a lot of people learn, and it's not easy to keep up a podcast week after week after week and sustain that. So we have some people dropping off for one reason or another. So Armand and Shelley, the owners of the Project Entertainment Network, have decided to just keep it down to 20, a little leaner, a little meaner. And, of course, those dollars a month that you pay into to get all this cool added value content helps to run the network. So you're helping us, and we're helping you. And it's a lot of fun for everybody, I think. And I give $1 a month to the Project Entertainment Network so I can get access to this, because I wouldn't get access to it otherwise, legit. So my dollar's in the kitty. And if you have that dollar spare, why don't you help kick in and have a lot of cool entertainment in the process, Zongers. That's the end of my pitch to you this week on Bazong. You're now free to go and listen to these other great Project Entertainment Network podcasts.
Armcast, Dead Sexy Podcasts. I'm your host, Armand Rosamilia. Fridays exclusively on Project Entertainment Network, where I interview authors, publishers, editors, artists, filmmakers, narrators, the lady from Walmart, whoever I feel like talking to. That's every Friday, Armcast, right here on Project Entertainment Network.
Every person's story has something to teach us. How others view life, how obstacles are overcome, how joy is felt, how fears are faced, how love is expressed. The Matters of Faith podcast explores individual stories of people's lives and how faith plays a part. It may not be your story, but it may help shape yours.
The Matters of Faith podcast with Jay Wilburn is on Project Entertainment Network.
This has been an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network.